could not be justified. BBC News.
On BBC Radio 4.
It's my thunderbox.
You've brought your own lavatory?
Yes.
Evelyn Waugh's satirical masterpiece on the futility of war.
Crouchback, I owe you an apology. It isn't you who's been using my thunderbox.
I know.
It's Richie Hook.
Starring Adrian Scarborough and Paul Reddy.
Stand it! Hey!
We're here because we're here. Take me back to dear old Blighty. Nobody knows how bored we are and nobody seems to care.
Sword of Honour starts next Sunday afternoon at 3.
Now, in part two of our classic serial here on Radio 4, the Now show's Hugh Dennis and Steve Punt, together with Julian Ryan Tutt, star in a dramatisation of Jerome K. Jerome's comic masterpiece, Three Men in a Boat.
This is a bad business.
Come on in! Let's be having ya!
I'm afraid it's a very old thing, you know. I expect you all know it, but it's the only thing I've got by heart.
By heart?
It's the judge's song out of HMS Pinafore.
Hang about, there isn't a judge in Pinafore. It's a bloody shit, not a courtroom.
Oh, no, I don't mean Pinafore. I mean, you know what I mean. The other Gilbert and Sullivan thing. No, do I mean Pinafore? Or do I mean trial by jury?
Let me just say, you don't look for much of a voice in a comic song. You don't expect correct phrasing or vocalisation. You don't mind if a man does find out when in the middle of a note that he is too high and comes down with a jerk.
Come on, then.
You don't mind a man being two bars in front of the accompaniment and then easing up in the middle of a line to argue it out with the pianist. But you do expect the man to actually know the song he's singing, if you see what I mean. This is surely fundamental to the whole enterprise.
No, I must mean the song from Trial by Jury. Give me the first few bars, would you?
Right you are.
No, that's not it. Give me the first few bars of the other one.
Are you going to join in?
Yes, of course I am. Start again at the beginning, man. When I was young, you've come in a bit late.
Didn't give me a lot of notice.
Well, you start and I'll come in. Just carry on and I'll catch up if necessary.
Come on, why doesn't he get on with it?
When I was young and called to the bar... What?
Wrong song, mate!
I'm sorry?
You me are, mate. We're trying to sing the judge's song from Trial by Jury to the tune of the First Lord of the Admiralty song from HMS Pinafore.
What should I be singing?
I think you should try and sing the First Lord song. What do you lot think?
Yeah, this is barely comic song.
Get on with it, mate. Sing, as long as you sing something.
Sorry, everyone, got myself confused. I'll make it up to you, though. First Lord song it is.
Good lad, that's the thing.
Good lad.
Give you a prelude, I will. Come in when you're ready.
When I was a lad, I served a term as office boy to an attorney's firm. I swept the windows and I swept the door. Swept the windows and I swept the door. No, hold on. No, keep going. I'll be there in a moment. Sorry, everyone. I can't have swept the windows. It makes no sense at all. I cleaned up the windows of the big front door. I cleaned up the windows of the big front door. That doesn't make any sense either, sir.
Come
on. I swept the floor, surely, yes. Right. I polished up the handle of the big front door. I polished up the handle of the big front door. Just keep going, I'll be with you in a minute.
What happened after you polished up the handle of the big front door?
Maybe I'll get straight into the chorus. Now, the chorus. This really is something. And I'm sorry, I can't remember all of the words. I diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-dee-dee till now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy. Now, you lot give me the chorus. It's just those last two lines repeated.
Diddle, 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 dee. Till now he is the ruler of the Queen's Navy. Good pub, that. Very good pub.
I liked it.
They keep the beer very well.
They do.
Pretty little front parlour.
Very.
Decent garden. And some patch of verbenas at the end. My great-aunt Lucy swore by verbenas.
Absolutely.
Good crowd of people. The song went down well, don't you think?
As well as it usually does.
Of course, I missed out a few words.
Oh, only here and there.
Nobody's perfect.
Generous of you to buy the whole pub around like that, Jay.
I really thought they deserved it.
Perhaps. Perhaps I should practice that song a bit more. What do you think?
Well, that might be an idea, you know.
George had towed us up to Staines, and now Harris and I were rowing the skiff towards Magna Carta Island. George knew of a perfect mooring nearby.
How close are we, George? Should reach it fairly soon.
Harris and I went on pulling, and still no mooring came in sight. And the banks grew ever more overgrown, and the river grew more and more mysterious under the gathering shadows of the night. I thought of hobgoblins and banshees, and will-o'-the-wisps, and the sirens who lured you into whirlpools. And I wished I'd been a better man and knew more hymns. Then we collided with George's mooring place.
I'll moor us to the roots. Perfect.
Supper.
Right, I suggest we get the canvas up first before it gets dark so we can see what we're doing. Then all the work will be done and we can eat with an easy mind.
It always amazes me, forgive me if I've said this before, the way, from time to time, both George and Harris are capable of perfectly sensible thought.
Right, five iron arches, bit like giant croquet hoops, and you slip them into the sockets in the sides of the skiff.
Oh!
You all right?
Oh, I'm sure I can manage with one eye, thank you, George.
Why won't you go into the hole, the blasted brute of a thing?
Socket is the word.
Blast! Well, I've got a few other words of my own, thanks.
That particular arch goes in the rear sockets of the skiff, not the front ones. The sockets and arches are not, so to speak, interchangeable.
It nipped me.
They've got hinges. Yes, you have to watch out for the hinges. Ow! Ow! Yes, you do. Those hinges. Look, you've nearly got it. Nearly there. Tap it in, Harris. No, not quite so forcefully.
Hold the flap, Jay.
To me.
Come on, get a grip. Where's the
We got them fixed at last, and then all that had to be done was fix the canvas covering over them. Montmorency and I stood well back during this. It seemed the wisest course of action.
Right, now just bring the canvas steadily towards me, Harris.
Right.
Unroll it over the hoops. That's it. No, it's dropped down. It's dropped down. Bring it up. No, don't get it round you. How on earth have you managed to do that?
See that, Montmorency? Harris has gone and made a parcel of himself with the canvas.
Now George is joining him. Solidarity, that's the thing.
Don't just stand there. Give us a hand, can't you, you cuckoo?
Have a care, Jay. It took 10 minutes to undo them, another 10 minutes for them to undo me, and another 30 minutes to get the canvas properly up. And then, and a bad time too.
Supper! I'll open the hampers.
I'll set the kettle to boil.
Shh.
I take your point.
Maybe I'm having second thoughts about tea. Perhaps we should have lemonade instead.
Tea can be very indigestible.
I agree. Forget the tea.
Works every time.
If the kettle knows you want tea,
it will never boil.
You have to sneak up on it.
People tell me that a clear conscience makes you happy and contented. But let me tell you that a stomach full of game pie does the business quite as well and is far more easily obtained.
Ah, why can't it always be like this? The stars, the wind in the branches, away from the world.
Just so. Just so. Long day, chaps. Time to turn in.
Yes. Let sleep sew up. No. Let sleep knit up the ravelled sleeve of care.
What is he talking about? Day 4, an inlet of the Thames, before Magna Carta Island. Quite a night of it.
Oh.
You're awake, George.
Oh, I'm not sure I've ever been properly asleep. Oh, the wind in the branches. What was I thinking of? It's very nice when you're awake, but somehow sounds rather less charming when you're trying to get to sleep.
Did you notice the way the boat seemed to change shape in the night, the way bits of it that weren't there before suddenly made an appearance and started to dig their way into your spine?
I did notice that, yes. Oh, I dreamt some people were trying to bore a gimlet into me. I don't think I've ever been awake so early.
It's quite a reversal of the laws of nature, for you, I mean.
It's the earliest I've risen since lodging with a certain Mrs. Gippings some 9 months ago, when my watch went wrong one evening and stopped at 8:15. Did I tell you about this?
I don't think you did. Let me put the kettle on and see if I can get some, you know, tea going.
It was in the winter when this happened, and a week of fog into the bargain, so the fact that it was still very dark when I woke in the morning was no guide as to the time. I looked at my watch, 8:15, and I had to be in the city by 9. I threw the watch down on the bed and washed and dressed. Perhaps it was being thrown onto the bed that had started it again, I cannot say, but the watch now indicated, dear heavens, 8:40.
Oh!
Mrs. Gipping's sitting room was dark. No fire, no breakfast. Huh? Even the front door hadn't been unbolted. Extraordinary way to keep a lodging house. Then, out onto the street. No sign of a bus or a cab. 8:45! Only one thing for it. By 9:05, according to my watch, but not according to the deserted streets, I was at Holborn.
All right, are you, sir? What exactly are you doing out at this time?
Well, that's it, isn't it? Well, what is the time?
Have a listen, sir. Here she comes.
Is that it? What? No more chimes?
How many did you want?
Well, 9. Look, my watch, you see?
Do you know where you live, sir?
Yes, of course I do. I'm lodging with Mrs. Gippings in Percy Street.
You just put that watch away and see about getting back there, sir.
From that moment, every policeman I met on my way back from Holborn to Soho regarded me with undisguised suspicion. When I did get back, I was convinced I had been followed and was under police observation. It was deadly cold and I thought about lighting a fire. I didn't seem to be able to handle anything from a scuttle full of coals to a teaspoon without dropping it or falling over it and making such a noise I would wake Mrs. G, who would think it was burglars and bang open the window and call police and they would march me away.
All rise. Be seated.
What we shall endeavour to prove is that the prisoner, George...
He has no other name.
He is known only as George, my lord.
Really? That in itself arouses grave doubts about the probity of the accused.
Trial? But hang on.
So I just had to wrap myself in my overcoat and sit in an easy chair until daylight came.
Dear fellow, what an ordeal.
And that is why I have never got up too early since that morning. The whole incident was a clear and present warning to me.
Kettle's boiled. That explains a great deal, you know, George, from a psychological point of view. Now, let's get Harris awake. You prod him strategically with that skull.
Right. Mm.
Hit harder.
You too. What in the name?
We knew you wouldn't want to miss the best part of the morning.
No, that's what we assumed, at any rate.
No, of course. I'm in your debt. Yes. A beautiful morning, though surely it's a bit... not as warm as I expected.
Sun's only just got going. Anyone for a dip?
Oh, a dip? He's taken leave of his senses.
Perhaps after I've had a mug of tea.
In truth, the water looked damp and chilly, and there was a wind blowing across us and rippling the water. And if the water felt half as cold as the wind... Though on second thoughts, we should perhaps get going to catch Magna Carta Island at its best. Let's make do with some bread and marmalade and press straight on.
Must we?
Look, all the way as far as the next bend.
But there's nothing to see, just trees and so on.
Yes, what is it, Jay?
Not a house, not a building of any kind in sight. The river and land are as they were, as though the centuries have been drawn aside
and we were ourselves on our way, hot, dusty, foot sore, to witness the writing of that stupendous page of history on that June morning of 1215, Magna Carta.
Bowman, Bellman, Pikeman, in the square, get to it!
My feet will never be the same again.
I was something better to eat than the dross we had last night.
The Baron's troops eat and drink deep. And still more troops come to the little town of Staines. And the children of the town gather round to watch them. And all of them listen to the sounds coming from the lower of the two islands. A great pavilion is being raised, and carpenters are busy nailing tiers of seats. And up the slope of Cooper's Hill, just opposite, are gathered the wondering rustics and curious townsfolk, and none is quite sure what the bustle is about, but each one has a different version of the great event that they have come to see. Some say that much good to all the people will come from this day's work. But the old men shake their heads, for they have heard such tales before. The king's bright-decked barge draws up to the little island. Behind the king is French mercenaries, a fierce-looking crew. The great barons step forward to greet the king. Everything is smiles and laughter. Honeyed words colour the air. Behind the barons, the grim ranks of their men. Will the king betray his promises, launch his mercenaries in a final treacherous strike against the barons, and turn the game even at this point? The king hesitates, then steps among the barons alone. No. A great cornerstone of England's liberty has been laid.
All very vivid, Jay, but help me out. The king gave way to the barons' demands, yes, who wanted a freer England, which sort of meant more power for them, but not very much really changed until Oliver Cromwell.
I didn't mean it quite as bluntly as that, Harris, but Magna Carta really was the beginning of the end of the absolute power of the monarchy.
A question.
Yes, of course.
Wonderful. The way the seed of intellectual curiosity can sprout in the most unpromising soil.
It's tricky.
Best sort of question.
Should we stop off at the Bells of Ouseley or carry on through Windsor to the Stag and Manor House at Datchet?
Now our painting, get this hat, is very strange and funny. Grandfather died and left to me his property and money. And when the will it was read out, they told me straight and flat, if I would have his money, I must always wear his hat. Where did you get that tile? Isn't it a knobby one and just a proper style? I should like to have one just the same as that. Wherever I go, they shout, hello, where did you get that hat?
Monkey Island, gentlemen, and lunch.
After that skimpy breakfast, I need it. Pass me the hamper, George, and the rug. Settle ourselves here. Give me a hand with this. I think we shall make a start on the cold beef. Now look at that. The pinkness. Mm. The line of the grain. The marble flecking of fat.
Oh, it's a work of art, Harris. There are things in the National Gallery that are not a patch on that beef.
Splendid job of carving, Harris. Tomatoes, that's what's required. I'm sure that in this large bag, there must be some whole ones left.
Fresh bread. A potato salad contributed by Mrs. P. All we need now is the mustard.
Where did you put it, George? Oh, dear. Your face speaks volumes.
I thought... Well, I assumed that you had packed the mustard. Oh, no.
Don't blame yourself, George.
I wasn't going to. Jay, there's no point in asking you if by any remote chance you packed some mustard. No, why should you? You don't even like mustard.
I'm afraid I did not. In the regular way of things, you'd be right about my not liking the stuff. I don't care for mustard at all, as a rule. But now that we haven't got any mustard, I'm looking at that beef. I don't think I've ever in my life wanted mustard as badly as I want it now. I crave mustard. I'd give worlds for it.
I'd give worlds for it too.
Me likewise.
Let's face it, anybody who'd come up to this spot at that moment with a can of mustard would have been set up in worlds for the rest of his life.
We'll have to make the best of things.
Mmm. Mmm. It's very good beef. Even if,
Quiet.
Mare, poor faces. It was as though the end of the world had come. Just as existence seemed weary, flat and stale. Then George drew out a tin of pineapple from the bottom of the hamper. We looked at the picture on the tin. We thought of the juice. We smiled at one another. Life was worth living after all. Harris got a spoon ready.
All we need is the tin opener. Must be near the tins, surely.
No, I don't see it. Turn out the hamper. Nothing. Empty the Gladstone, George. Check the boards at the bottom of the boat.
Nothing.
We've got to do something to get it open. My penknife.
Harris tried to open the tin with a pocket knife and broke the knife and cut himself badly. And George tried a pair of scissors, and the scissors flew up and nearly put his eye out. While they dressed their wounds, I tried to make a hole in the thing with the spiky end of the hitcher, and the hitcher slipped and jerked me out between the boat and the bank into 2 feet of muddy water, and then the tin rolled over, uninjured, and broke a teacup. Then we all got mad. We took that tin out on the bank, and Harris went up into a field and got a big sharp stone, and I went back into the boat and brought out the mast. And George held the tin, and Harris held the sharp end of his stone against the top of it, and I took the mast and poised it high up in the air and gathered up all my strength and brought it down. It was George's straw hat that saved his life that day. Harris got off with merely a flesh wound. We battered that tin into every form known to geometry. And finally, George knocked it into a shape so strange, so unearthly in its wild hideousness.
Oh, look at that dent in it. Twisted, like a mouth.
Harris rushed at the thing, seized it, and flung it far into the middle of the river. And we got into the boat and didn't stop rowing until we reached Maidenhead.
Don't you agree, Gwendolyn?
Just so, Hugo.
Hugo. Maidenhead. Never liked Maidenhead.
Yes, look at them. The swells, the toffs, and their overdressed female companions.
I think the whole scene looks rather jolly.
Too snobby. This is a town of Hugos and Gwendolyns. A town with showy hotels patronised by dudes and ballet girls. Hear that? Steam launch. Don't get me started on that subject.
Where's Monty? Haven't seen him since we stepped ashore.
Oh, you know how he loves a crowd.
Yes, I do know. I remember very well that holiday
I'm sure Monty is fine. Enjoying himself in innocent pleasures.
No, stop. Oh, get off.
Sorry, excuse me.
Oh, stop him. Oh, please. Oh, dear.
Right, he's with us. Monty, down, sir.
Fire thing, he's got his paws on her leg and with his lower body, his gosh.
Bumping her.
It's his way of showing affection. Down, Monty, down.
I'll show him some affection with the toe of my boot. Ah!
Oh!
I've got him.
Are you all right, my petal?
That tongue of his.
Put your tongue away, Monty. Oh.
My white trouser leg, it's ripped.
Why, so it is.
So, what do you intend to do about it?
Well, Monty could always rip the other one, so they matched.
Better step aside, my dear. Leave these fellows to me. Let me see. City boys, are you?
Well...
Right you are.
You're right, Harris.
I certainly am, George. Down from the East End, we are down for the big dog fights. Haven't heard of the Maidenhead dog fight? Something cruel it is. Monty here's the reigning champion. Monty Blood, they call him.
Oh, he's getting loose. I can't hold him.
No!
Hugo! Oh!
Not much of a gentleman, is he, that Hugo? Gwendolyn, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm William Samuel Harris. This is George and this is Jay.
Delighted.
Yes, you look like a Gwendolyn.
Something about the way the mauve ribbon on your hat goes with the colour of your eyes. And, pa, I never know how to put these things.
Hark at him.
You know, Mr. Harris, I have a distinct suspicion that you're not from the East End at all. But, Hugo, where's he gone? What happened to him?
Now, cast your eyes over there. Yes.
Oh.
Monty is chasing Hugo towards the riverbank. Oh, dear. He looks as though...
Swim.
No, you're quite mistaken, Gwendolyn. Monty's a very competent swimmer.
I meant Hugo, you idiot.
Hugo's not doing badly for a beginner.
No, I think it's the way Monty encourages him.
Gosh, look at them go. Hugo'll be on the far bank at this rate. Would you like to join us for tea, Gwendolyn?
We're moored just 50 yards away.
Well, I really don't know. Ma and Pa will expect me back at the hotel before too long. Though what I'm going to say about Hugo, I don't know.
You're walking out with him?
Only in the strictly pedestrian sense of the term.
We have Madeira cake, if that would influence your decision.
Oh, it would. Very favourably.
More tea, Gwendolyn.
Yes, please. You always boil the kettle in such a surreptitious way.
Oh, there's no other way to do it, I promise you. If the kettle catches on what you're up to...
This Madeira cake. Very good. It's very unusual.
I'll let you into a secret. Some of our packing got a bit jumbled. To start with, it was really just a straightforward tea cake, but a bottle of Madeira got loose, so to speak, and spilled into it, the cake... evolved.
Really?
Here comes Monty. Over there. He's very wet.
Oh, look at him.
Now watch. Oh! Here he comes.
He's not going to...
No, I think...
Wait, he's coming towards me.
He's got something for you.
Monty knelt beside his offering, his limpid eyes directed towards Gwendolyn's.
Oh, Monty.
He cocked his head slightly to one side.
What is it?
I think it's vegetable rather than animal, but best not to inquire too deeply. He's apologising for any offence given.
None taken, Monty.
I think on the whole I handled that rather well.
Goodbye.
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 Ah... Gwendolyn. What? Pass me that skull, George.
And so we took our leave of Maidenhead and travelled at our leisure to that grand reach beyond Balters and Cookham Locks, past Cliveden Woods, one long harmony of different shades of green. This is one of the sweetest stretches of the whole river, through the lock at Cookham and then...
By Jove! Do you feel it?
The breeze, and getting stronger, and it's in our favour.
Amazing, eh, chaps? Think of the first rule of the river. If you've remembered to pack a sail, whether you go downriver or upriver, the wind is always against you.
Too true.
And the second rule is, whenever you forget to take a sail, the wind can be guaranteed to be consistently in your favour both ways. But we have a sail, and the wind is in our favour. There's obviously been an administrative error.
Let's get the sail up before anyone finds out. Together now, George. Come on, let's get up.
There she goes.
That's it. Like flying, ain't it?
And so it is. You are no longer a slow, plodding thing of clay. You are part of nature.
Up ahead, fishing puff.
Your heart is throbbing against hers. Your limbs grow light.
Jay, did you hear me? You've got the tiller.
The clouds, so close above your head, are brothers, and you stretch your arms to them.
Jay, turn the tiller. Three fishermen dead ahead. I'm trying to get the sail down.
The light was fading, and we seemed like knights of some old legend, sailing across some mystic lake into the unknown realm of twilight, unto the great land of the sunset.
Jay!
But we did not, in fact, journey into the realm of twilight. We went smack into those three old fishermen.
Next stop, Marlowe, then.
George?
No, it's quite all right, Jay. A mind like yours ought not to be expected to give itself to steering boats. Better let a mere commonplace human being see to that.
You know what I can't get over?
What?
The language those old fishermen used. granted we knocked them off their seats into the bottom of their boat with a heap of fish on top of them, but you'd think they'd be grateful for a bit of excitement. Those curses of theirs, though. They seem to embrace our past and our future.
Indeed. They speculated on the characteristics of our possible offspring. Yes, good substantial curses. Comprehensive in their scope, fruity in their language.
Even managed to include my blazer.
The light's going. So, where shall we pass our night under the stars?
Good question.
The banks are quite high around the Marlow stretch of river.
Tricky to get ashore.
Difficult to find a good, secure mooring.
And you get the noise of the passing steam launches.
Not to mention the wake, bouncing the skiff about like a cork.
But I'm sure we'll find somewhere.
If we search long enough.
Maybe we should put up in a pub for the night.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, you really think so, Jay?
Crown is supposed to be good. Just for one night, of course.
Well, just the one night, I suppose. Hmm. And this isn't a half bad meal.
No, pretty good. Needs only one thing. Oh, waiter.
Sir?
More mustard, if you please.
But you've already had... Of course, sir.
Better bring another bottle of wine while you're at it.
Sir?
What the heck? Oh, it's you, Monty. Keep under the table, old chap. The remains of the lamb cutlets, yes, of course. Just try me a bit more discreet.
Hmm. Good health, Harris, George, and Montmorency.
Good health.
Good health.
Day 5. A beautiful morning. Marlow is one of the pleasantest riverside towns I know. Not picturesque as such, but with many quaint nooks and corners. After breakfast, we strolled the streets, set about revictualling our boat, but before we'd even got so far as entering a shop...
Look at that, boys. Monty's getting ready to go on the warpath.
A cat had begun to trot across the road.
What a huge blighter! It's only got half a tail.
And only one ear.
Well, the popular prejudice runs in favour of two.
Monty's heading for him.
And that he was, at speed, like a stern warrior seeing his enemy given over to his hands.
Much of that cat's nose seems to have gone the same way as its tail and ear. Doesn't look very impressed by Monty, does it?
This old Tom had indeed a calm and contented air about it. It sat down in the middle of the road and looked at Montmorency with a gentle, inquiring expression. Montmorency does not lack pluck, but the look of that cat brought him to an abrupt stop.
Yes, you want me? Can I, do anything for you?
Nah, not really. No thanks.
Do feel free to speak up if you really want anything, if I can oblige you in any way, you know.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm afraid I made a mistake. I thought I knew you.
If we'd met before, I'm sure we'd both remember.
Ah, quiet. I mustn't take up any more of your time.
Not at all. It's been a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning. The three of us headed for the nearest grocer's. Monty fitted what he calls his tail carefully in its groove and brought up a discreet and subdued position in the rear. We did not speak of the cat. It seemed for the best. Our departure from Marlow I regard as one of our greatest successes. I insisted at all the shops that the provisions we chose should be sent with us there and then, carried by a boy. Our march down Marlow High Street was impressive indeed. The order of procession was as follows. Montmorency carrying a stick. Two disreputable-looking curs, friends of Montmorency's. George carrying coats and a package he was being mysterious about. Harris trying to walk with easy grace while carrying a bulging Gladstone case. Greengrocer's boy with basket. Confectioner's boy with basket. Cheesemonger's boy and fruiterer's boy with baskets. Boots from the Crown carrying a hamper. Old man with a clay pipe carrying a bag. Bosom companion of old man. Six more boys and four stray dogs.
Ah, here's our boatman.
Good heavens, gentlemen, what a sight. Is yours a steam launch or a houseboat?
Onwards towards Henley-on-Thames. Just past Hambledon Lock, we paused for tea, but found...
Oh, how very galling. After all the supplies we've taken on board, we've no bottled water.
Damn.
Let's not fuss. I know where we can find water.
Where?
Take a look around you.
I don't see anything. Oh, you can't mean the river, can you? We can't drink the river.
I wasn't proposing we should drink the river. Just some of it. Enough to fill the kettle. It's clean enough. Monty drinks it. It doesn't do him any harm.
But I'm not Monty.
I suppose if we boiled it and then reboiled it.
Exactly, Jay. Any possible germs or poisons would be eliminated.
Mmm. Good cup of tea.
Excellent. Eccles cake?
Monty, what is it? Funny fellow. Oh. What's that?
What's what?
Caught in the reeds over there. The current pulling it free.
It looks like a dog.
It does, rather.
A very quiet and peaceful dog, it has to be said. Easy in its mind, you might say. The way it floats dreamily on its back with its legs in the air. You don't see many dogs doing that.
Oh, no more tea for me.
It's all right for you. You've only taken a sip. I've drunk my whole belly mug.
On he comes, the picture of serenity, and bumps up against the bank and settles down cosily for the evening.
Oh, shut up, Jay.
George, you've got a cousin who's a doctor, haven't you? Do you think Harris will contract typhoid?
Well, we did boil the water thoroughly, so I'm sure he'll be all right. Anyway, he'll know one way or another in a fortnight.
We caught a breeze, which took us gently up past Wargrave and Shipleg. Wargrave is a pretty picture of a village, and we refreshed ourselves at the George and Dragon.
Mm. Perfect afternoon, eh?
Mm, what a glorious place.
That reminds me. The only bit of history I know about Wargrave. Don't worry, it's quite short.
Go ahead then, Jay.
In that church, there is a memorial to Mrs. Sarah Hill, who bequeathed £1 annually to be divided at Easter between two boys and two girls who, and I quote, have never been undutiful to their parents, who have never been known to swear or to tell untruths, to steal or to break windows.
Where would one find such creatures?
Ooh. Quite. And more to the point, fancy giving up all that for 5 shillings a year. It's not remotely worth it.
Oh, I've been studying the map.
After the events of Hampton Court, is that wise?
I've learned my lesson. We might push on to Sonning through this backwater. It's quite a neat shortcut. Roam around for an hour or so, then go back to one of the Shiplake Islands and put up for the night. If we give ourselves time, we could prepare a full-scale slap-up supper.
We've got quite a few odds and ends.
You thinking what I'm thinking?
An Irish stew!
Capital! Another branch over here, George.
Yes, of course. You ready for one of these beers?
In a moment. That's it. How are you doing with the potatoes, Jay?
I thought the peeling was going well, but the more I peel, the more there seems to be left on.
Let me look. Oh, dear heavens, this is scarcely larger than a walnut. You're wasting them. Look. I'll show you. You must scrape them rather than peel them.
It seemed difficult to believe that the potato scrapings in which I later stood, half smothered, could have come off 4 potatoes. It shows you what can be done with economy and care.
Look, you can't have just 4 potatoes in an Irish stew. Here, wash these ones down, Jay, and stick them in without peeling. These beers are just the thing.
I found a cabbage and some peas.
In they go. Still a lot of room to spare. Now, let's check the hampers again.
Half a pork pie.
Perfect. Oh, is that cold boiled bacon, I see. In it goes. Now, what's this? Squash tomato. Half a tin of potted salmon. Some old biscuits. Why not? Bulk it up.
Monty, yes. What have you got there? Ah, a dead water rat. I'm not sure that's an experiment the world is quite ready for.
No, come on, stick it in. Can't do any harm.
I believe it was at this point that I begun to wonder exactly how many of those beers George had drunk.
We must show some restraint and respect for precedent.
Mm. Progress, Harris. If you never try new things, how could you tell what they're like? Think of the man who first tried German sausage.
Well, I made the offer.
I'm not hurt. Just a little disappointed.
I don't think I've ever enjoyed a meal more. There is something so fresh and piquant about it. One's palate gets so tired of the old hackneyed things. Here was a dish with a new flavour, with a taste like nothing else on earth.
It's nourishing, too. Why, there's any amount of stuff in this stew. The potatoes, it might be a bit softer.
No, won't hear a word against the potatoes. This gravy, George, it's a poem.
Not too rich?
Not at all.
Let me help you to some more.
Ah, steady there.
And so finally, to bed. Day 6. A good night's sleep and a beautiful morning. Though cold. So cold that I was in such a hurry to get my shirt on, I accidentally jerked it into the water.
My belly shirt! Can't really see anything that funny in it, George.
No, it's childish to make fun of a simple accident. Could happen to anyone, sorry.
Be quiet, you three imbeciles. Pass me the boat hook, one of you. Now, let me... Right, that's got it. Now...
Oh, here's something strange.
What's that, old boy?
I have an initial embroidered on the front of my shirt, J.
So do I.
Yes, and the initial embroidered on the front of this shirt is the letter G. It isn't my shirt, it's yours.
What? Oh, you silly cuckoo.
Oh, you see the humour of the thing? Oops, sorry. Well, it was wet anyway. Just hook it out of the weeds and it'll dry off in a jiffy.
Oh, you!
I've never for the life of me been able to understand why George didn't grasp the fun of the thing. But that's George. On our way to Goring, we got our clothes washed. We had tried washing them ourselves in the river under George's superintendence, and it had been a failure. Indeed, it had been more than a failure, because we were worse off after we had washed our clothes than we were before. Before we had washed them, they had been very, very dirty, it is true. But they were just wearable. After we had washed them, well, the river between Basildon and Goring was much cleaner after we had washed our clothes in it than it was before. In fact, all the dirt contained in the river between Basildon and Goring we collected during that wash and worked it into our clothes.
I think we should have scrambled eggs for breakfast. I shall cook them. My speciality. I've cooked them on picnics and out on yachts. People develop quite a taste for them. We'll travel miles for them. They hanker for them.
I'll get the stove going.
I'll need a frying pan and as many eggs as you can find. Dash it all. Oh, bubbles, Beelzebubble.
No, I don't think we should interfere.
But the egg has just run down his sleeve and onto his trousers.
Look, a fair bit of that one actually went into the pan.
Now what's he doing?
He's chivying the eggs about the pan with a fork. Oh, some egg is shot out over the side.
I suppose he knows what he's doing.
Dash it all!
Hang on, he's touched the body of the pan. Nearly dropped it. Oh, no, down on the ground he's doing a kind of dance around the stove, flicking his fingers, cursing. Is this part of the culinary arrangements?
The way Harris does this, it certainly spoils a chap for ordinary cooking. You know, the sort of cooking Mrs. P does.
Mrs. P. Ah, yes. Those chops. That rhubarb tart. Oh, I wish you hadn't mentioned Mrs. P.
All right, chaps.
The eggs, they shrink a bit, don't they?
Part of the process. Try some.
If it tastes the way it smells... I took a spoonful of burnt and greasy egg into my mouth and rapidly pouched it, as a hamster does, in the corner of one cheek for disposal at some later, more discreet time and place.
What do you think, Jay?
Beyond words, dear fella.
But
The look of simple pleasure on Harris's face made the whole thing worthwhile.
There's a bit of a queue at the lock. I've an idea. Would you like to hear me play the accordion?
So that's what you picked up at Marlowe.
Yeah, I didn't know you could play the accordion.
Oh, I've been studying the manual. The principle is simple.
But you have actually played it.
Yeah, this would be my first outing, as it were.
Matter of fact, I've got a bit of a headache.
Ah, nothing like music to soothe the nerves, take away a headache. Hang on. I'm using the wrong hand. That's it.
I think on balance, if you don't mind, I'd rather have the headache.
Give me a chance, Harris. What does he want to howl like that for when I'm playing?
You might just as well ask, what do you want to play like that for when he's howling?
George, Tiller, please, we're moving again.
But it can't be my turn to scull again. You two have scarcely taken a turn.
I can assure you it is.
I've done the calculations.
We were at Goring, about 10 miles above Reading, when we found the body of the dead woman.
Oh, Lord. What's this?
She lay very lightly on the water, and her face was sweet and calm. It wasn't a beautiful face. It was too prematurely aged to be that.
Hey, you men on the bank, lend a hand here.
It was a gentle face, lovable, although pinched with poverty. It had a look of rest that you see on the faces of the sick when pain has left them.
We'll pull it in, we'll know what to do.
You're not the first to wash up here, she is.
We found out the woman's story in due course. The old, old story. She had loved, and the man she had loved had deceived her. Her family and friends decided she had sinned, as some of us do now and then, I believe, and closed their doors against her.
Got it now. Gently now, gently.
Shame, like a millstone round her neck, she kept herself and, yes, the child she had borne on 12 shillings a week for 12 hours drudgery a day. 6 shillings for the child, 6 shillings to keep her own body and soul together.
6 shillings.
You're right, old chap.
The thing is, Harris, 6 shillings a week does not keep body and soul together very unitedly. Body and soul become anxious to get away from each other when the bond is so slight. She put a penny box of chocolate in her child's hand, left the child at the gate of Coram's Fields, and took the train to Goring. She walked through the vast and timeless woods and came to the river, and the river gave her the solace that her friends had withheld.
I say, Jed, don't get het up.
God help her, and all the rest of us sinners.
Blatant bumptiousness of it all.
Look at the man at the stern, hands in his pockets, smoking a cigar.
Expression on his face is sufficient to excuse a breach of the peace by itself. Never see a steam launch, but I feel I should like to lure it to a lonely part of the river and there, in the silence and the solitude, strangle it.
Makes you yearn for the good old days, when you could go about and tell people what you thought of them with a hatchet and a bow and arrows.
Oh, and that damned whistle, ordering lesser vessels out of the way.
Makes your blood boil. The way they're all dressed up, steaming past us, and with a cheek to wave at us. You'd like to sink the boat, wouldn't you, just? Look at that girl, dancing around like a common something.
Wait a moment.
Hello!
Gwendolyn.
Mr. Harris!
That's Gwendolyn, isn't it?
I rather think it was.
But she's gone.
I rather think she has. We moored at Sonning. Putting up the canvas was by now routine. Harris was in an odd mood.
A pub supper, then?
Excellent idea.
I don't know. I'm quite happy to stay here and finish the remains of the stew. and smoke my pipe. Have a glass of whiskey. Take Monty for a walk along the riverbank, then read for a while.
Read? You're not unwell.
I'm fine.
But how are we to find some rather special place just round the corner without you to guide us?
Oh, you'll manage. We'll share a nightcap later.
Very good, then.
Hmm. Do you think Harris is all right? That cheese was good.
Hmm. Although I do have a fancy for something more elaborate. A little French place off the Gray's Inn Road. Some steak and Bernays sauce.
Mussels! Oh, gosh, yes.
Harris is maturing. He's finding his innermost self.
What are you talking about?
Looks rather lively around that piano, don't you think? Should we join them?
Now that's more like it.
Every evening at the stroke of five, me and the missus takes a little drive. You'd say, wonderful they're still alive if you saw that little donkey go. When we starts, the blessed donkey stops. He won't move, so however quickly lops. Pals start whacking him when down he drops. Someone says he wasn't meant to go. Watch out, all the neighbours cried. Who you gonna meet, Bill? Have you bought the street, Bill? Laugh, I thought I should have died. Knocked him in the old Kent Road.
What's that bloody dog doing?
Monty, what is it? Harris, what's happened to you? What's that on your face?
You've been through a hedge backwards. Sit down, man.
Just carry on, everyone. This round's on me. Drink this and tell us why you're covered in feathers.
And mud. And... ooh, better open a window.
Harris, you look quite...
Swans. Dozens of them.
It seemed we had moored close to a swan's nest. And soon after George and I had gone, the female swan came back and kicked up a row about it. Harris had chivied her off, and she had gone away and fetched up her old man. Harris said he and Monty had quite a fight with these two swans, but courage and skill had prevailed in the end, and he had defeated them. But half an hour later, the swans returned in force. Harris's estimates of the actual number varied between a dozen and 32.
Careful, careful.
Shh. They're probably still around.
We returned to the skiff with caution. But of the swans, there was no sign.
They don't like me, swans.
When George prepared to make us hot toddies, there was no sign of the whiskey either. We examined Harris as to what he had done with it, but he did not seem to know what we meant by whiskey, or what we were talking about at all.
Anyone see a swan?
Montmorency looked as if he knew something, but said nothing.
Flappy white thing.
In the night, we were woken by Harris, peering about the boat with a lantern, looking for his clothes. He was particularly concerned about his trousers.
How do I have feathers in my pants?
I slept soundly, and my last remembrance is of being rolled over on my side and Harris muttering about it being an extraordinary thing where his umbrella had got to.
Before the incident with the swans, no.
Day 7. The end of our journey. We left Oxford for Paddington, which we reached at 7, and immediately took a cab for the little restaurant off the Gray's Inn Road.
Mm.
I must confess to enjoying that supper. We pegged and quaffed away in silence for a while, until the time came when, instead of sitting bolt upright and grasping the knife and fork firmly, we leant back in our chairs and worked slowly and carelessly. And we stretched out our legs beneath the table, let our napkins fall unheeded to the floor, and found time to more critically examine the smoky ceiling than we had hitherto been able to do. We rested our glasses at arm's length upon the table and felt good and thoughtful and forgiving.
Hmm. Quite a trip, really. Do you think we learned any lessons from it, Jay?
I think we probably did, but...
I know I did. Managed to learn something, that is. Got it by heart.
Really? What?
I'll show you after supper.
Is this wise, Harris?
Are you sure?
Quite sure, thank you. Oh, la, 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 la. When I was a lad, I served a term as office boy to an attorney's firm. I cleaned the windows and I swept the floor, and I polished up the handle of the big front door.
He polished up the handle of the big front door.
I polished up that handle so carefully that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
He polished up the handle so carefully that now he is the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
As office boy, I made such a mark that they gave me the post of a junior clerk. I served the writs with a smile so bland, and I copied all the letters in a big round hand.
He copied all the letters in a big round hand.
I copied all the letters in a hand so free that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
He copied all the letters in a hand so free that now he is the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
By Jove, Harris, well done. Everything in this narrative, as I promised, has been strictly truthful, though certain incidents and facts have been discreetly edited. The proprietary name on the tin of pineapples that made its presence felt earlier has been omitted upon professional advice. While the Little French Restaurant is not in fact off the Gray's Inn Road, this alteration is for purely selfish reasons. The rest and complete change we had promised ourselves with our river trip refreshed us all in different ways. George's habit of somnolence receded to the extent he achieved promotion at the bank and an office to himself, where his habit could safely return. As for Harris, he made several solitary trips to Maidenhead the following summer, apparently calling at various hotels, but said nothing of his purpose, hiding behind a preoccupied expression. One day, he returned, a changed Harris, beaming from ear to ear. But that belongs to another story. As for myself, the history of the Thames that I set out to write, as you will have seen, lost quite a bit of its strictly historical detail. And not to be forgotten, of course, Montmorency. Between ourselves, he has moderated his attitude to cats. Which reminds me of something else.
Jay!
Sorry, I digressed.
Oh, it's quite all right.
Dear chap.
Three Men in a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome was dramatised by Chris Harold. Gwendolyn was played by Catherine Jakeways, and the three men were Julian Ryan Tutt, Hugh Dennis and Steve Punt. Music was provided by Gary Yershin with Eddie Hessian on accordion. The producer was Melanie Harris. Three Men in a Boat was a Spark Lab production for BBC Radio 4.
And at the same time next week, Evelyn Waugh's satirical masterpiece on the futility of war, starring Paul Reddy and Tim Pigott-Smith. Sword of War, our new classic serial, at 3 o'clock next Sunday.